We're going to Capitol Hill now to talk about a tariffs bill introduced yesterday. You're with us on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle have introduced legislation that would require President Trump to get congressional approval before taking steps to impose tariffs or do other trade actions. We'll get the details on this bill from one of its co-sponsors. Congressman Mike Gallagher is joining us. And while we're at it, we'll ask him about other developments on the Hill, like where things stand with negotiations on a border security package ahead of that February 15th deadline. And you have a line at 800-642-1234. On that debate over border, what strategy do you think is best? Are you following the trade negotiations happening with China? What do you hope the final deal looks like? And what questions do you have for Congressman Gallagher about trade, about healthcare, foreign policy? Call in. You can email ideas at WPR.org. U.S. Congressman Mike Gallagher is a Republican serving Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District that covers Marinette County, Green Bay, and Appleton and the surrounding area, where it is 24 below zero with a wind chill of minus 43. Representative Gallagher, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me. I hope you are indoors and staying warm.
Look, I'm just trying to bring you closer to your constituents, feeling like what they feel, right? Right? I'm setting the scene for you. I don't want you to feel what they feel. No. So just yesterday, Representative Ron Kind and other members of Congress from both parties introduced the bicameral Congressional Trade Authority Act. What would this bill accomplish?
So it's important to distinguish between two things that are going on right now. There's a so-called Section 301 tariffs, which are designed to counter China. This bill does not touch those. I'm largely supportive of our efforts to get tough on China. But the second thing is the Section 232 tariffs, which are the steel and aluminum tariffs that we've placed largely on our allies, which I believe have been very destructive to Wisconsin farmers and Wisconsin manufacturers, and also these are the tariffs that the president has imposed under a national security justification. He said we face a national security threat from steel and aluminum. I don't think that's true. And so what this bill would do would require Congress to actually vote on any imposition of tariffs under Section 232. And if the executive branch is not able to secure the approval of Congress, then these tariffs do not go into effect. It would be retroactive 4 years. It would also shift the responsibility for conducting the 232 investigation to the Department of Defense as opposed to the Department of Commerce. And so what's really going on here is an effort by me, Representative Kine, and many others to claw back some of this authority that Congress has consistently surrendered to the executive branch on trade. And after all, under the Constitution, we have the authority to regulate commerce with foreign nations. We've given that up over the last 100 years, ironically, as part of a trade liberalizing measure. And regardless of how you feel about tariffs, whether you think they're good or bad, I think it's obvious that you should want the elected representatives of the American people in the most accountable branch of government to have a greater say in how this unfolds. And that's what we're trying to accomplish. And I think, and this is the final thing I'll say, I'm sorry to go on here, I want to enhance the president's ability to be successful in the effort against China. And I think picking a fight with our allies simultaneously undermines that. And so I think by settling the 232 issue, we can actually enhance the 301 issue, if that makes sense.
Okay, so before we get, though, to China and talking about China and the trade war there, you're looking at the Section 232 talking tariffs. We saw what happened there with Harley Davidson. Is this legislation, will it help farmers who have lost buyers for their crops and products? Is there any peace of mind you can give to, like, soybean and ginseng farmers who are listening?
Well, I think the sooner we resolve the ongoing disputes on 232, the better position our farmers and manufacturers are going to be in. I mean, we have dairy farmers that have lost orders and market access in places like Mexico. And if we can resolve 232, perhaps they can begin to claw that back. But every day we allow this to go on, you know, you have Mexican customers that grow accustomed to buying from other people besides Wisconsin dairy farmers. And that, to me, is counterproductive. U.S. importers have been forced to pay an additional taxes on roughly $23 billion in steel imports and $17 billion in aluminum imports. And so do I think this will solve everything? No, but I think it will help. And again, I think it will ultimately enhance our position in order to get tough with China and also put our domestic manufacturers and farmers in a better position over the long term and ensure we don't go down this road again in the future unless Congress says, okay, this makes sense. We are okay with you going forward on this. This is a more equitable distribution of power between the executive branch and the legislative branch.
Your Republican colleague, Representative Sean Duffy, who represents North Central Wisconsin, proposed basically contrasting legislation, if we're looking at this correctly. His bill would allow the White House more tariff authority. Why do you oppose his plan?
Well, I think it's important to know. I think Sean and I have the exact same goal, which is to say we want a level playing field for Wisconsin manufacturers and farmers. I think we just have a slight disagreement on how to get there. I think by vesting the power back in Congress, we'll have a more responsible trade policy. Sean seems to believe that we need to give the administration more authority to threaten our allies with countervailing tariffs. He's right to suggest that on certain goods, our allies have far greater tariffs than we do. In many cases, though, if you average it out, our applied tariffs are lower than those of the EU and Canada. So there's no disagreement about the ultimate goal. It's just a slight disagreement about how to get there.
Talking with Congressman Mike Gallagher, who joins us to talk about the new trade bill he co-sponsored and other issues that Congress is working on. The bicameral Congressional Trade Authority Act was introduced yesterday. Republican Senator Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania co-sponsored the Senate bill. Representative Gallagher is co-sponsor on the House version. And by the way, so is his Democratic colleague Ron Kind of Wisconsin. You have a line at 800-642-1234. Are you a farmer? Do you work in manufacturing? Have you felt the effects of the trade war? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's look for a moment at China. Trade negotiations with China began this week in Washington. Those talks are happening after we learned about charges the Justice Department is bringing against Chinese tech giant Huawei. What are you hoping U.S. negotiators accomplish this week?
Well, these are critical negotiations, and in the past two rounds, I think the Chinese felt like they had a deal with the administration only to have it changed. I hope the administration drives a hard line, but really we have to look at what matters. What are we most concerned about with respect to China? It's actually not their tariffs. It's their non-tariff barriers. It's things like their massive intellectual property theft. It's their subsidization of state-owned enterprises, and it's what they demand in return for market access, in addition to broader counterintelligence concerns it raises. So I actually published a piece this morning talking about China's efforts to expand its global access. And one way we see this is by their so-called Digital Silk Road Initiative, which just aims, this is a signature initiative of Chairman Xi Jinping that aims to build information and communications technology infrastructure, particularly in developing countries, not from an altruistic perspective, but they facilitate technology transfer that robs foreign firms of intellectual property. They promote Chinese technical standards. They advantage Chinese firms. And so state-owned or state-affiliated firms like Huawei or ZTE get an advantageous position while spying on us, which is why I've introduced bipartisan legislation to hold Chinese Communist Party telecom firms accountable for any malign activities such as sanctions evasions. And I think we're just beginning to wake up to the massive scale of the threat that is posed by companies like Huawei and ZTE. And the arrests in Canada, in Poland, are the best evidence of that fact. And so at some point, we're going to have to resolve this. And so I salute the administration for taking a hardline approach. I honestly don't know what's going to come out of this latest round of negotiations, but it's long past time that we have woken up to the concern posed by the Chinese Communist Party.
We're talking tariffs, we're talking trade, federal budget, and more with Representative Mike Gallagher. You have a line at 800-642-1234. What would you like to see from Congress now that it's back in session? Should something be done to ensure future shutdowns are less painful? Call in. We'll get back to the conversation in a minute on the Ideas Network. We have Congressman Mike Gallagher on the line with us from Washington here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We've been talking about new legislation he co-sponsored yesterday on tariffs. We're talking through other developments on the Hill that affect Wisconsinites, including the government shutdown and the negotiations underway on border wall funding. What would you like to ask the congressman? 800-642-1234. Perhaps it's about health care, about foreign policy. Perhaps the Mueller investigation is on your mind. You can join in, tweet us at WPR Mornings. So let's look at the border situation, what we have here. We've just come out of the longest federal government shutdown in history. We saw the Congressional Budget Office figures reveal the shutdown cost the economy $3 billion. Lots of anecdotes from federal employees feeling trapped. Democrats in the House offered a border security plan yesterday that would not provide a penny for the wall. What deal would you like to see come to fruition on border security?
Well, I think any deal has to involve some amount of physical border security. What the president is proposing is not one gigantic concrete wall running coast to coast. And I went to the White House. The president was there, the vice president there. We had five Democrats, five Republicans. And it was clear to me that we're just sort of speaking a different language. You know, my Democratic colleagues will say, well, we don't support the wall, but we do support physical border security. Well, if that's the case, what are we disagreeing about, right? And this is actually a relatively solvable problem. It's sort of the best debate you want to have, because it's not a debate about abstract principles. It's about specific things we can measure in terms of geography, human resources, and costs. Having spent a significant amount of time at the southern border when I was in uniform, I can tell you it's not secure. And any solution will involve a mix of physical border security, technology, enhanced personnel, and critically personnel to our court system, our immigration court system. Because the real crisis we face now is one that starts in Central America and winds up with people claiming asylum at ports of entry. And so the White House actually did put forth a nuanced proposal. I understand when you use the word wall, it turns a lot of people off, but it has to have some measure of physical border security. And in return, I think there could be a solution on the DACA issue. That sort of framework makes a lot of sense to me. That sort of DACA for physical border security makes sense, but it just strikes me that we're not any closer to getting a solution after this shutdown. And people would rather use this issue to score political points than solve the problem and move on to the much bigger problems we face, right? If we can't solve this matter of $5.7 billion, how are we going to get on to lowering drug prices, fixing health care, restoring our military? I mean, those are the big challenges we face.
So if push comes to shove here, if Congress can come to a deal by this next deadline, February 15th, will you go with shutting down the government again? Will you vote for that?
I'd have to see what proposals are on the table. I hope we can avoid that. I mean, that would be the sort of the literal definition of insanity if it gets us nowhere. But I just don't know what's being proposed right now. And my fundamental problem that I've said from the start is that this is all top down, right? We have a group of about four people that are negotiating largely in secret while the rest of us rank and file members await white smoke to emerge from the chimney of the White House, right? That's not a recipe for success. This should be from the bottom up. You need to go back to the committees of jurisdiction. You need to go back to the more junior members. You need to try and forge that consensus from the bottom up. That is the best chance you have of getting a compromise and also having that compromise last. And I fear that if we don't do that, then the administration is going to invoke a national emergency to do this through executive order. And that will just continue the distortion of our Constitution that we've seen for the better part of the last 60 years, which is to say Congress surrenders its power and everything is done through executive fiat, which works well if you happen to agree with who's in the White House at present. But then the next person that occupies that position you don't agree with can completely reverse that, right? So, for example, Republicans were not that enthusiastic when Obama did things on immigration through executive order. And so it just sets a bad precedent. And it also allows Congress to wash its hands of any responsibility, thereby reducing the likelihood that this institution will be productive in the future.
So you introduced the Serve the People, Not the Swamp Act, which, if signed into law, would prevent Congress from going into recess without first adapting a balanced federal budget. Why do you think this bill is necessary? What would it do?
Because we keep making the same mistakes over and over again, right? This was an entirely predictable crisis, and we waited till the last second to even begin negotiations over border security. We always wait to the last second to fund the government, or we put it on autopilot through continuing resolutions, which is actually destructive and wasteful of taxpayer money. So we need to break out of this destructive cycle. We need to change the process through which Congress operates. And so what I'm proposing to change the paradigm are simple things like ending congressional pensions, so members aren't incentivized to stay there forever, so they can actually exercise some intellectual honesty and maybe take some risk occasionally and use their brain before they spout off on cable news. I'm also proposing a ban on lobbying for former members of Congress so that people don't use the office as a stepping stone to get rich, to enrich themselves, and therefore their votes are tainted by the expectation of material wealth. Simple things like no budget, no pay. If we don't pass a budget on time, then we are not allowed to go on recess for the entire month of August. This is just Wisconsin common sense to me, but in D.C., common sense is an uncommon virtue.
Okay, so we're short on time here. Let's move into health care. The Urban Institute is out with new data that says Affordable Care Act exchanges are expecting a stable year, but many Americans with disabilities and pre-existing conditions, they're really concerned about their future of a ruling that overturns the ACA if that remains in place. What do you want to happen here with the ACA and where we're headed to next?
I think any healthcare reform going forward has to start from the position, the unequivocal position, that we will protect people with pre-existing conditions. So let's just state that at the outset. Now, the challenge is, how do we do that while also reducing healthcare costs over the long term so that we don't bankrupt our entire country, right? We're spending 18% of our GDP on healthcare. The average among advanced industrialized countries is closer to 8%. So how do we do that? To me, it all starts with transparency. Transparency in pricing. Because the fundamental problem in healthcare, from my perspective, is that none of us as patients can decipher our medical bills when we get them. We have no idea where the money is going. And let's be honest, there are a lot of insurance companies and big hospitals that have gotten rich over the last few years, even as our overall healthcare system has gotten worse. And so it all starts with transparency for me. I have a bipartisan bill on mandating transparency and pricing, but I think we need to go beyond that to require insurers to provide more information to hospital systems so they can manage their patient populations as such a population. And also transparency, I would say, in a third dimension, between employees and their employers. Employees should know exactly how much employers are spending on their healthcare so they can make more responsible healthcare decisions. So if we get that, and if we simultaneously tackle the social determinants of healthcare, i.e. the fact that your exercise and your diet actually matter a lot more for your health than the type of insurance you have, then we can start to bend that cost curve down. But ultimately, it has to start with that principled commitment to protecting people with pre-existing conditions. As a conservative, I start from the principled position that Ronald Reagan articulated in the mid-1980s, which is to say no one in this country should be denied health care because of a lack of money. We can fix this problem, but we need people to stop demagoguing the issue.
Let's look at U.S. intelligence agencies for a moment here. They released the worldwide threat assessment that said the Trump administration trade policies have strained traditional relationships and prompted foreign partners to seek new ones. Are President Trump's trade policies a national security threat?
Well, this is an argument for everyone to get on my bill. So I'm hoping that this will result in a wave of co-sponsors and this thing will be carried to the House floor and the president will sign it into law. But listen, it's obvious to me, having heard from all of our partners directly, my background is in national security and foreign policy, and so I spend a lot of time thinking about our relations with the rest of the world, that, yes, people are concerned about the ongoing trade war with particularly with our allies. And as I articulated at the beginning, if we're to have any hope of being successful in this long-term competition with China that the Trump administration rightly identified, we have to tap into our unique source of strength, and that is our alliances. You have Chinese academics that are saying something very true right now, which is to say the core of competition for leadership of the world over the next three decades will come down to who has deeper friendships. So we start off from this position of massive advantage relative to the Chinese, and it's on us to maintain those alliances and build on those and act as the leader of the free world going forward, because we are the best hope for the world. We have enormous gifts and enormous responsibilities come with that. And so I'm actually optimistic about the U.S. over the long term, but we got to get a few big things right politically here over the next decade.
Well, Representative Mike Gallagher, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Stay warm.
Thank you very much for that. Representative Mike Gallagher represents the 8th Congressional District, talking to him about a number of issues, including tariffs and a tariff bill he introduced yesterday as part of bipartisan legislation. We'll be watching how that goes. And you can join us as we continue our conversations on the Ideas Network at 800-642-1234. Up next, it's news, and we'll talk about the growing conflict over who gets to live in America's cities, in America's urban areas. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're with us on The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.